We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And it is time to let the cat or the dog out of the bag. Do you remember the major family announcement that I foretold on Monday before the national championship
Twins,
game?
Rick! Twins, yes!
No? Nope. Not okay. Adding to the family in that way.
Okay. What's the major family announcement?
I just showed Wendy a picture of the major family announcement, and she gave me, like, the cutest female reaction to a cute picture of all time.
So, if knowing Wendy the way I know her, it's either a puppy, a rabbit, or a cat. One of the three.
All right, so let's spin the bottle. It is, ding, 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 a pug.
Nice!
A pug named Shakti.
Shakti.
That's right. Shakti. And Wendy is giving a double up on Shakti.
Now, do you already have Shakti at the house?
We don't. And check this out. Preacher Man, perk up here for a second. We're going to Nashville to pick up Shakti. And it's actually, John, going to be... It's perfect. It's like a totally young dog. I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks old right now. We're going to get it at 6 weeks. And it's got to go through the vaccinations and all that kind of stuff. Any old way, we're driving up to Nashville. It's the weekend before the Super Bowl.
Nice.
So it's perfect. I'm not going to miss football or anything. And is that cute or what?
Yeah, it's a cute dog.
Like, pugs are awesome. They're so ugly. They're cute. And so Charity is just bonkers. She's going nuts. She's already gone to PetSmart and bought a bunch of gear for the pug that we don't even have. Apparently, it's the runt of the litter, but thinks it's the biggest dog in the litter.
Yeah.
And I know you can relate to that, John.
Yeah, that's Bo Morgan every morning. The run of the litter and thinks he's the big dog.
Anyway, the Kamla family is expanding. We have a new pug named Shakti. And we have never been to Nashville, okay? We talked about this before. We've been meaning to go, so now it's awesome. I'm going to get to see some awesome blues music on Friday and Saturday night in Nashville. We're going to go eat some great meals, and we're going to pick up a pug.
Rippy's Barbecue. Rippy's Barbecue.
In Nashville.
Paul will attest to that. Paul gave us that recommendation when we were in Nash Vegas a couple of years ago. Rippy's Barbecue, you bring your appetite. Wear sweatpants.
I ate at Rippy's when I was up there over Christmas.
Dude, I put a display on at Rippy's Barbecue.
More of a display than Preacher Man eating 18 naked wings at Twin Peaks and Buckhead?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a sampler platter. It says meant for two. Mm-mm. That means meant for me because I destroyed. Arch and Bo and Paul were like, you're going to eat all of that? Sure am. And if you guys leave anything left, I'm going to eat some of that, too.
Is there anything more depressing than you open up like, a lasagna, family size, and I eat the whole damn thing by myself?
Remember
those six, and there's enough left for one.
What's the stuff that comes in a bag where it's like it's like the frozen food bag, it's the pasta and vegetables, and it's really good, like the garlic butter sauce, but it does say family size, and you throw it on the stove, and you maybe add like a quarter a cup of water, and you let it simmer, and it cooks in its own juices, and it's really good. I'll go through that thing. I'll be like, yeah, this will be awesome. I'm going to make this. I'm going to have some for lunch the next day. Yeah, there's never lunch the next day.
That's good stuff, man. Hey, so Preacher Man and M.O., I just sent you guys a picture of Shakti. Preacher Man, what do you think?
It's a good-looking dog.
I appreciate that, man. So this dog is going to be at full growth, 10 pounds.
If he had Georgia won, would you have named him Kirby or Roquan?
That was up to Charity. Out of my hands, my friend.
Roquan
is a great name for a dog.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively, I guess. But I'm excited, man. But more importantly, my wife is excited. She's got new bounce and new enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's always good for the house. Now, be prepared when he gets a little bit older. You're going to hear this at night. Because those dogs, because of the smushed-in face, they make a lot of noise.
If you need just a little preparation, come snuggle with me today when I take my nap because I'm still battling this head cold. And I must have gotten 15 elbows to the ribs last night to the point where I woke up and Gretchen was on the couch.
Really? She was on the couch.
That's how bad it was.
She should have booted you to the couch.
Couldn't move. Oh, really? A couple of Mucinex and a couple of melatonin last night? I was out.
How did Zyrtec D treat you?
Fantastic.
Dr. Campbell,
we're doing
in the
little
house.
Prescription drugs here up at the little pass off in the hallway.
They're not even prescription drugs.
Hey, you can get them over
the
counter.
Boss is shaking his head. He's actually in the studio with us. He's like, what are y'all doing in here?
What do you mean? Because we're sick?
Yeah, a little pharmacy talk.
Yeah, you know, some of us get out and about. We're not in the friendly confines of the Kia studios all the time.
I'm done talking about Georgia.
So, M.O., do you now understand the life-altering experience that is Zyrtec D?
Oh, it's fantastic. See,
it dried you up, didn't it?
I'm an old, stubborn man in that if I get sick, I whine and I complain and I don't do anything about it. I'll just lay on the couch. I won't go get a Z-Pack. I won't go get medicine. I just sit on the couch and complain like a child and drink Gatorade. And I'm like, I just want to feel better. like Gretchen has to take this pill, you stupid child. You will just leave me alone. I'm going to sit here and whine.
No more, though. You have Zyrtec D.
Give me another day or so.
What do you mean? Did you take one before you went to bed last night?
No, I took one this morning.
So
one yesterday. This morning.
All right.
She's giving me some stuff. Listen, it's a whole cocktail going on right now inside of this body. There's 18 different pills floating around. I don't know what's happening.
John, do you still have cooties?
I'm a lot less cootieable than I was.
Are you
yesterday.
Cootie free?
Not 100% free because I still got rumblies.
You got bubble guts still?
No. It's just I think it's more gas right now. So there may be like a green mist following.
Awesome! I can't wait.
I love Airtight Studios.
Unlike David Pollack, I will not crop dust the studio now. Paul and Mark, all bets are off.
He's done that before. He will walk into this side and it's airtight on our mm-hmm. side too, and he'll be like, "Hey guys, what's up?" See ya, and walk out.
I may crop dust our meeting later on. Hey, Frida, how's it going?
Please don't do that. By the way, say a prayer for Mike Bell. Okay, Mike Bell had to work at John's station mm-hmm. Here in the Kia studios after John was breathing all over it for 4 hours. So say a prayer for Mike Bell. And that's what's up.
What the is going on?
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
Their ability to run it, not just with one runner, but with a different style of runners that they use and feature in different ways. When you watch them, they make you defend everything. It's not a one-dimensional team. They have real balance in what they do and how they do it, much like we do in terms of that balance. And that's what makes defending a team like them difficult, because they have the ability to attack you in different ways.
Well, one of the guys, and that's Dan Quinn, obviously, is getting us started here. That's what's up, as we got a playoff game Saturday afternoon, 4:30 from Philadelphia. What is it, MetLife Stadium up there?
The Link.
The Link. It's CenturyLink
Field.
I don't know. No, that CenturyLink is
Seattle.
It's Lincoln Financial Field. That's what's it.
No, it's a bank, right?
Yeah.
Bank Stadium. Insert bank name here.
Right? I used to work for that company.
Did you?
Yeah, they owned radios for a little while, and then they went out of that business.
Did you ever scam them?
No.
Can you ever skim off the top or anything?
No,
like
there was
that? I think the statute of limitations is lifted.
Yeah, well, being that company, the radio side, doesn't exist, there was nothing to skim. they took it to the end and they said bye-bye. The scary part is one of the guys that we're playing against, we've already played against this year, and that's Jay Ajayi. Remember what he did running the football for the Dolphins all the way back in week number 5. 26 carries, 130 yards. He was running through the Atlanta Falcons. They can run it with multiple people, but he's a guy you've got to get to the ground early. He's a big back. You don't want to let him get that head of steam going. We got to play better, and we did not tackle well when we played against Jay Ajayi the first time. This team tackled really well in the wild card game, obviously, against Los Angeles. They must tackle better against Jay Ajayi.
You're absolutely right, John, and you go back to last year's game. To me, the game swung on the drop by Julio Jones when we were at Philly and lost that game. I believe that was just before the bye week. But they ran the ball all over us, John. And now you've got Jay Ajayi, and that was Ryan Matthews, who I don't even believe is in the league right now. He was doing a lot of that damage. Now you have Blunt, the hammer that New England had last year, whose role has been kind of sort of phased out. Mm-hmm. You also have Corey Clement, the rookie out of Wisconsin, who's been getting busy this year. But John's right. The guy to bring down is Jay Ajayi. And what I would do, John, is stack the line. Mm-hmm. I would bring 8. As the Falcons did against the L.A. Rams, and I would start that way until Nick Foles gets me out of that, because I believe that that Poole and Trufant and Alford and Rico are going to be totally able to cover man-to-man and allow Keanu to come up and knife and you know, dive at the feet of Jay Ajayi, and as you said, get him before he gets that head of steam going.
And what the Falcons can lean on also, look at the guys that you faced in the last couple of weeks. Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, you faced them twice in a 3-week period. Those are difficult backs to cover and to get to the ground. Todd Gurley is the MVP of the league. And outside of 2 runs in the fourth quarter, you really corralled him and kept him from getting everything moving. You can do this against Philadelphia because their passing game not nearly as equipped to make plays with Nick Foles. Carson Wentz, this is a completely different game. This is a game, quite frankly, that Philadelphia probably is a 4 or 5 point favorite in if Carson Wentz is playing.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And in terms of what Nick Foles has, he's got big-time weapons, man, when you consider Alshon Jeffery. Nelson Aguilar had a career year.
Zach Ertz.
Torrey Smith. And then you've got their bevy of tight ends, Zach Ertz, and you've got Celek, and you've got Burton, who had terrific games when Ertz was out. But do they have the guy to get him the rock? And Hugh Douglas continues to call Nick Foles Napoleon Dynamite. It makes me crack up every single time. But, John, I don't believe that Nick Foles is going to make enough plays in this football game. I feel like the Matt Ryan, Nick Foles thing is advantage Falcons, and I think it's game over. I think that is going to make the difference in the game. Matt Ryan is going to go up there and ball out. By the way, they were talking about 42 on the morning show and maybe some precipitation or something like that. I just checked, and I don't know. I just checked Philadelphia weather on Saturday. It said 51 degrees with a sun. So, we are catching a break
weather-wise.
Because it could be 5 degrees and snowing in Philadelphia with wind, okay? And so if we get anything up over 35 degrees, that's going to be a win for the Falcons.
Now, it does say the low on Saturday will be 20. I got a feeling that's going to be the overnight low.
No question.
Because it does say 51, partly cloudy right now on Saturday. Sunday, it's supposed to be much cooler there, 30 with a low of 17. If it's in the 50s at game time, Philadelphia is in some trouble.
No doubt. No doubt. And the thing is, like the Jets game, where that soggy game, John, you were up there. I don't believe that we're going to have to go up to the Northeast and play one of those weather games. I think it's going to be a pretty good track for us.
Yeah, you think about this. If you can navigate this game, you will not play outdoors again.
Yep.
You'll be indoors either against Minnesota or New Orleans, and you'll be indoors for the Super Bowl.
Let's go.
Let's go. Come on, Falcons. Let's get this done. Elsewhere, what's up? The NFL playoffs. I know we haven't had much of a chance because of the national title game to talk about it, but 8:15 Saturday night, Preacher Man's Titans on the road taking on New England. You saw the story yesterday that Bill Belichick says it's all in on the Titans. He doesn't want to hear about the Giants anymore. He doesn't want to hear about any of that nonsense. That's all crap anyway. Bill Belichick's not going anywhere. Patriots, Titans. Unfortunately, I don't think the Titans have much of a shot in this one.
I'm fascinated by the Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game.
I am too.
Jacksonville intercepted Ben Roethlisberger 5 times in the first matchup. I think they had 2 defensive touchdowns. It was a blowout, like 30-9 or something like that. How much revenge is there for Pittsburgh? Is Pittsburgh just the better team? Does Blake Bortles pee it down his leg again? I'm fascinated with that game.
We'll see how that one plays out. And then the late one, very interested on this side. It's Saints at Vikings, 4:40 Sunday afternoon. Again, I think this comes down to a QB game, and my gut feeling on Monday was it's going to be Saints-Falcons in the NFC title game. What will we talk about that week? Who knows?
Hey,
we take a break. We come back. When we come back, the Falcons defense finding itself just at the right time. An article breaking down what they've done. Marquand Manuel, he hasn't got enough credit for what he's done so far this year on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Discipline of the way that the players are playing. They have a real understanding of the scheme. And for a long time, I felt, you know, the way they feature the guys in the system really lends to, you know, playing really good run defense. So those are the things that we've seen. They play a lot of 8-man or 7-man boxes like we would to play down and physical. So you'd expect them to have a good run defense, and they certainly do.
Okay, but the thing is, and Dan Quinn knows this, the Philadelphia Eagles cannot stack the box. They cannot go 8 in the box against the Atlanta Falcons. That is not going to work. As a matter of fact, go ahead and do it. We would love that, okay? Because Free and Coleman will be able to get theirs on those little chip, you know, swing routes, on the wheel routes, on the little duck-ins over the middle. And we're going to beat these Eagles, man. I just know it. Rick Kamla and John Michaels. And, John, you know, let's talk defense. Mm-hmm. But in terms of Philadelphia and what Dan Quinn was saying right there in terms of, you know, Philly tends to stack the box. Philly, as we know, is the number one rushing defense in the National Football League. They've been up there at the top all year long. They don't give up touchdowns either. They're very, very stout run defense. I want Matt Ryan to and Sark and the whole thing to attack through the air. Mm-hmm. Kind of like how Georgia tried in the first 2.5 quarters of that game to turn it inside out on Alabama and not get in the box and not do the, you know, the man-to-man warfare in the trenches. Get Fromm throwing the ball downfield and making big plays. That's how I want the Falcons to throw to set up the run. I don't want them to run to set up the pass. Do you agree with that?
It's going to be a game plan, I think, Rick, similar to what you saw against Carolina. Remember, Carolina's very stout up the middle, running the ball. You go against Starlo Tulele, Kawan Short, Luke Kuechly. Those guys are flat-out monsters. Now, Philly's got them as well. Fletcher Cox, one of the best defensive tackles in all of football, and you're going to have to deal with him probably for 75 snaps on offense, and you've got to account for him every single play. But remember against Carolina, I said that was a game where Steve Sarkisian didn't try to just keep pounding into the line of scrimmage. He realized that our way to beat them was to go out and throw the football, and he did a great job scheming, and they executed exactly that. I think you see a similar game plan against Philadelphia this week.
You know what's interesting? You bring up Sark, and I just had a quick thought on him, and we'll get to the defensive stuff you want to talk about. Would you agree with me that year one with Sark has been way better than year one with Kyle Shanahan?
Yes.
I mean, way better. Like, we have a little nitpick here, a little criticism there. You can do that of every offensive play caller in football, okay? Mm-hmm. But by and large, I think Sark's done a pretty darn good job with this offense this year. I know the numbers are down, but I think it's execution, all the, you know, tip ball interceptions, just some weird stuff. I'm not saying, oh, Sark is the reason that we've fallen, 10 points a game or whatever it is.
Yeah, Sark's had his moments where it's been questionable. And I think nitpick, we've actually done more than that. I know I have. We've been critical of Steve Sarkisian when need be. But the last few weeks, it felt like Steve has called a very good game. Coach Sark has been a guy that's been dialed in. I know the New Orleans game didn't play out well. It wasn't Sark's fault that you had three snaps inside the one-yard line and you got 0 points. He did what he could. He called run plays. Alex Mack, unfortunately, got blown up on a play. He gets driven into Devontae Freeman. The ball pops out of there, and New Orleans recovers. On a fourth down play, they tried to run the football, and it didn't work again. Could you have called something differently? Sure. But guess what? When he tried to call something creative against New England, people went bananas calling a jet sweep on fourth and one down by the goal line. You've got Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman. You've got Alex Mack. You've got guys that you're paying big money for up front. You need to be able to get that yard. So I can't criticize him for that.
Super quick, let me tie up the Philadelphia run defense stats. First in the league, 79 allowed per. Minnesota was second at 83 rushing yards allowed per game. Philly allowed only 7 rushing touchdowns this year. The only teams that allowed fewer, New England allowed 6, and Tennessee allowed 5. Mm-hmm. So that is an elite run defense in Philadelphia.
Well, somebody else who's been elite, and I don't think Marquand Manuel has gotten nearly the credit he deserves this year. He gave me a little dap leaving the field the other day. Marquand is just, if you're ever around the team, Marquand's got the hat on. He's got the iPad. He's out on the field sometimes 2.5-3 hours before the game just walking. I know he'll sit there. I think he's a very spiritual person because I'll see him sit and pray. And he's going to walk back and forth. And it's almost like he's going through the game plan, talking to himself because he's just talking. And he's one of those guys. He loves football. And then you see the way that he's gotten these guys to buy into it. There were stretches early in this year. Remember when quarterbacks would go 9 of 10, you'd go, man, I'm tired of this vanilla, boring-ass defense, and it's not getting the job done. The last 8 games, the Falcons are 6-2. Down the stretch, they've yielded 17 points or fewer in 3 of their final 5 games, allowing only 100 yards rushing once in those final 6 outings. Those games, remember, 2 games against the Saints, a game against Carolina, a game against the Vikings, including the game against the Rams. And remember, the Vikings game, you lose 14-9. It damn sure wasn't on the defense.
Nope.
And the New Orleans game, you could argue, wasn't on the defense either because we just chronicled those 2 games or 2 times that you had the ball inside the goal line and couldn't get it done. They shut down a Rams offense that was the highest scoring in the league. Jared Goff had his lowest yards per attempt all season long against the Falcons. You got to start giving credit to Marquand Manuel for what he's done. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying people in general really need to start giving this guy credit for how great he's been down the stretch.
Great rip, man. And in terms of Marquand Manuel and any conversation about him being interviewed for a head coaching job, I think if the Falcons win the Super Bowl with a signature defense – maybe he gets some interviews, but he's 1 year on the job.
Yeah, I don't
as a
think this year he will.
So, but there's been some talk about that, and you see the Bears absolutely reach for Matt Nagy of the Chiefs, who's been their play caller for 6 games, and now he's all of a sudden a head coach. Before last year, we thought there was no way in heck that Kyle Shanahan was going to be a head coach the following year, and it ended up that way. You have Denver making a really curious hire with Vance Joseph. You have the L.A. Chargers, you know, making a good move with Anthony Lynn. But at the time, I was like, who the hell is Anthony Lynn? What's he going to do as a head, right?
Right.
So anything is possible, but I think the talk about Marquand maybe leaving here as a head coach is a little premature.
Yeah, it probably won't happen until a year from now. Now, a year from now, if he has this, and remember, this
correct,
was a top
sir.
10 defense this year. If they're a top 4 or 5 defense next year, Marquand Manuel, the coaching tree that he's under, go from Pete Carroll to Dan Quinn, and now Marquand has been under Dan Quinn for a while. He'll absolutely be a guy that's going to get a phone call. Players seem to love playing for Marquand Manuel.
No, it's working out, man. And I love the energy and enthusiasm. You know, John, that on the day, you know, you want sort of a cerebral dude on offense, right? Mm-hmm. You're just sitting there. You're thinking. You're scheming. You're what's next? What's
mad
next?
Scientist.
What's next? A mad scientist. But on defense, and I know you get mad at who's the Florida State guy, Kelly?
Oh, Charles Kelly. Well, he's a clown.
But he's
not there anymore, though.
No, I think he got fired.
He
did get a job somewhere else. I can't remember. Too many coaches moving around. I like defensive coaches that mm-hmm. way. I just like the bouncy, vibey defensive coaches. You know, they're up pounding hats on the guys that they come off the field on third down. And Marquand Manuel is that guy.
I like those kind of defensive coaches when they get results. The problem was Charles Kelly wasn't always getting results with the guys that he had. And I think most Florida State fans would agree with me. They wanted Charles Kelly gone for quite some time. Marquand is that guy. But he's also a guy that he'll be bouncy with his players. But if you look off on the sideline, there'll be times that Marquand is off to himself with the iPad or the Microsoft Surface Pro, which is what the NFL uses. He'll be over there with the little stylus, and he's drawing up plays, and he's just that guy. There's certain people you like, and you go, these guys love football, and they live and breathe football, and Marquand Manuel is one of those guys, and you're seeing it because he's got players on the team that are the same way. I don't know how much on TV they showed Deion Jones pregame. Deion Jones is turning into a different player. Like before, Deion's a very happy. Anytime you see him, he's probably the nicest guy on the team. How you doing? Good to see you. Deion's just that kid. But if you look at him pregame now, he was yelling at the LA Rams. Let's go. Come on. I want a piece of this. He did the same thing when they played New Orleans. He's become that leader that we wanted in the middle, and it seems to me like he's taking a piece of his defensive coordinator and he's bringing it on the field.
That's big time, dude. Great observation from the field as well. Charles Kelly still out of a job, by the way. Charles Kelly, unemployed.
Why would anybody hire him?
As we speak. Chris Collinsworth on the broadcast annoyed the heck out of us with all the regurgitation of the Super Bowl narrative, which I got to believe that people on their couch in Chicago and people on their couch in Las Vegas are like, really, dude, let it go. Mm-hmm. I mean, let alone down here. But he did have effusive praise of Deion Jones. And he said that he's no longer sort of a rising young player. He's becoming one of the great defensive players in all of the NFL. Now, we kind of saw that starting to brew last year, mm-hmm. and he's carried it over this year. We're talking about a guy who had who's top 5 in tackles in the National Football League, and his numbers are ascending. So Deion Jones is a star. They absolutely killed it with that draft pick.
Here's another thing that makes you feel better if you're the Falcons going to play Philadelphia. Philly has one loss since September where they played him. I'm not counting the Dallas game at the end when it was 6-0. You know the only loss they had in that entire stretch?
Philadelphia.
Yeah, they had one loss since September.
I don't know. Who is it?
They played Seattle. You know what defense is eerily similar to Seattle? It's the one that Dan Quinn and Marquand Manuel run.
Good call. And
24-10 was the final there.
And Wentz was in that game. It was Wentz's worst game of the season. He made a bunch of mistakes. He had some bad luck go against him as well. You remember he's running into the end zone and just gets popped and fumbles. But he had some bad throws in that game, and the credit goes to that Seattle defense. They played maybe their best game of the year that game.
That's one of the only defenses that shut this team down all year. They lost to Kansas City early in the year, but that was 27-20. The only other loss they have was the game against Dallas where half their team didn't play. So I know, and this is going to be me reeling back in the expectations just a hair for everybody that's listening, I know we look at Philly and go, wounded dog, no quarterback. That's still a damn good football team we're getting ready to go play.
It is, but it's headless. And you're right. They've got a lot of the bases covered. Offensive personnel, John, it's probably the most deeply talented set of skill players in the league. Mm-hmm. They've got running backs for days. They've got tight ends for days. They've got wide receivers for days. But do they have a quarterback who's going to bring it all together to a perfect boil? I'm betting against Nick Foles every single time. Now, if some smoke and mirrors, like close your ears, Preacher Man. If Tennessee were going to, and I know it's AFC, NFC, but Tennessee to me is a bit of a smoke and mirrors job getting to the second round of the playoffs. It's more Andy Reid losing it than them winning it. If they were going to Philadelphia against a Nick Foles team, I would think that Nick Foles would be good enough to get that job done. Not against the Falcons.
We'll take some texts at 404-741-0929. It's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You guys can call in just a moment. Hey, don't forget, though, be a fan at Special Olympics Georgia State Indoor Winter Games this Saturday. Support over 3,000 Special Olympic athletes as they compete in bowling, gymnastics, basketball, and more. The competitions will take place at different venues throughout Cobb and Bartow counties. Visit SpecialOlympics.org for a detailed schedule and venues. 92.9 will be there at Olympic Town at Lake Point Sports Complex in Emerson from 10 to 2 this Saturday. We take a break. We come back. How did Atlanta handle the national championship? That's our slice of life. Was it good? Was it a good test for the Super Bowl? If you were at the game or downtown, let us know. How do you feel?
The Slice of Life on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yep, Slice of Life brought to you by Shane Company. Blower mind, not your budget. With an engagement ring from Shanko, your friend in the jewelry business. Well, that's how it sounded as it ended Monday night at the Benz. That's Scott Howard on the Bulldogs Radio Network. Terrific play-by-play guy. And just one of the great live calls I've heard, to be totally honest with you. He is at fever pitch. He's thinking the Dogs have the advantage after the sack. And as he's, I guarantee, as Scott Howard saw that spiral going through the air, his Adam's apple dropped down to his groin because he knew that that's what was going to happen. When I saw Tua, and John, I'm sure you felt the same way. When you saw him, you know, hop, and deliver that ball, I was like, oh, no. And then you see on the replays that the Parrish completely gaffed on the play and Sanders got bought in on the look away and all that kind of stuff. But Tua threw a missile, man. And I wanted to shout out Scott Howard one more time. That's just a great live call, man.
Yeah, I can't imagine being up there trying to make that call, knowing your heart is in the game. Everything's there. As a fan, it's devastating. And now you're trying to do something professional. I told you, I would have probably gotten in trouble for things that I would have set up in that booth. But, you know, again, this is why I'm not a professional play-by-play guy. I can filter myself here thanks to Mark Owens and the dump button. Slice of Life today, and brought to you by Shane Company. Blower mind, not your budget, with an engagement ring from Shane Co., your friend in the jewelry business. Question is simple. How did Atlanta handle the national championship? We will have the Super Bowl next year. Do you feel we did a good job handling it? My buddy Chris actually was at the game. He said this. He said, I feel like Atlanta did really well hosting the national championship. He said the cops did a really good job at directing traffic and keeping people safe. He said nothing negative happened that I know or heard of. And there were more trains. He said, and all the more trains were successful at getting downtown. No problem. The only issues I've heard were people getting in the actual game. And that had to do with the fact that Secret Service took over and the president was there and people were stuck outside. Now, that's something that has to change. I was at the ACC championship game and something similar happened there. It took me an hour and 20 minutes to get into the game. Because what happens is, what are you doing at football previous? You're tailgating. You're hanging out. You're doing whatever you can with all your friends. And all of a sudden at, you know, 7 o'clock for an 8:30 game, you go, oh crap, I got to get in the stadium. We have 60,000 people trying to go through all the same gates with heightened security try to get in. So I don't knock security. I wouldn't want their job. You're trying to make sure that everybody is safe at the game, and that's the most important thing out there. But I thought in whole, and Mark, you were down there all weekend, I thought the national championship game was handled very well by the city.
And you can't help what the weather does. A lot of people complained about the weather. You can't help Mother Nature. And when the president comes to town, doesn't matter who the president is, there's always going to be that much commotion and chaos trying to get around anywhere. I will say, and I don't know if this has anything to do with the president, but I felt more safe than I thought I would. Because if you're walking towards a big fan fest out in the Falcons Landing, they had game day set up there and they had the vendors. Look on top of the buildings at the Georgia World Congress Center. There were SWAT team members with just the ARs on their chest, just looking down across the crowd. And that wasn't on one building. That was all over the place, around the entire campus. So safety, there were cops everywhere. You couldn't fart in the wrong direction without a cop looking at you strange. So the safety,
that's why they were looking at me.
So I'll give them credit for the safety, and I'll give the city credit for the big overhang boards. If you go down 75, 85, there were signs that said college football championship will be here on Monday. Avoid the area starting at 2 p.m. So the word was out there. You don't even have to be a sports fan to know that something was going on. Those signs popped up on Friday.
So the question is, in our slice of life, how did Atlanta handle the national championship? Did they do a good job? Did they prove that they're ready for the Super Bowl? I say yes and I say no. From a safety tip, if President Donald Trump is not here for the game, you're not getting nearly the security that you saw. Mickey, makeup artist over at Turner, I was talking with her yesterday. She went to the game with her husband, and she said that there were no regular Mercedes-Benz Stadium security people. Mm-hmm. I guess all given the night off, or maybe they were repurposed to do another job, but every security person was a Secret Service person. Yeah. Every single one of them. Okay, so that doesn't happen if President Trump is not at the game.
Sure.
So people are waiting an hour, 2 hours, 2.5 hours to get into the game. It's a major problem. So if you're saying, did Atlanta handle it correctly? I think in the stadium, probably everybody had a beautiful time. Great stadium, the concessions, everything. I don't think there were any complaints about that. But you can't hold people up for 2 hours. Okay, and I get it. The president is in town. So if the president is in town for the Super Bowl, then everybody is completely buzzkilled getting into the stadium. They have to find a way to expedite that process.
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, then don't come to the game, Prez.
Yeah, well, that's one that unfortunately isn't our call, and I'm sure it wasn't the call of the people of the NCAA who are trying to get the championship game. Nobody at Mercedes-Benz Stadium can make that call.
But with that said, if he decides he wants to come back for the Super Bowl, now they know a better way. They may
what
know
is
a better
the better
plan.
Way, though?
Well, maybe this was a good run through to say, okay, obviously.
Have them zip line like Sting out of the roof.
Because I got to play the cynical card here. I don't think that President Trump and his Secret Service people they're way more concerned about his safety than our safety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in terms of changing the process, they're not going to change the process. They're going to want 1,000% maximum security for the president of the United States. And we are all going to have to suffer as a byproduct of it.
When do we get the Super Bowl?
Next year.
Next year.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call on this. 404-741-0929. Bob's in Decatur, wants to sound off. Bob, how do you feel the city handled the national title game?
I think we handled it well, man. You know, it felt like the Super Bowl all over again. So I don't think the city was as dead as it was after the Super Bowl. But, you know, I think it's a big stepping stone for Atlanta and for Georgia, man. You know, we both went down the same way. So I really think that, you know, we're here, man. We here. Atlanta and Georgia here. So they better believe that.
Well, the city is definitely here, and obviously we're going to have a ton more. When Mr. Blank built this building, it was set up to have Super Bowls, not one, national championships, not one. And I'm going to tell you, next year will be bigger because remember, the national title game, you find out the week before who's coming, and most fan bases can't take a week to come here. We were in Houston. You know what it was like for the entire week being there. Monday and Tuesday was dead-ish.
All the way dead. Your boy wanted to find some trouble on Monday night. Nothing.
Well, that's when you were all tired.
I wasn't. I wanted to go out and get it in. And there was nothing going on Monday night.
But Wednesday
started getting going.
It was popping. Yeah. So imagine this city, a city that likes to party like Houston.
Super quick. Preacher Man, did Atlanta handle the national championship the right way?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, don't complain about
that. Thing to Rick and John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And away we go from the Kia Studios, brand new hour of the Midday Show with Rick and John. And as John said before the break, did Nick Saban win it or did Kirby Smart give it to him? Or did Kirby Smart blow it? Let's break this down. Here's where this comes from. John, all kinds of national pundits they're like climbing over each other as if it's a zombie movie, okay? And there's zombies crawling all over planet Earth. To praise Nick Saban mm-hmm. for the nadsy call of going from Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa. I just don't understand how these pundits, who apparently aren't doing any talent evaluation, couldn't see the writing on the wall and couldn't anticipate that move being done by Nick Saban. Did these pundits watch the first half? Did these pundits watch the Clemson game where it was one hopper after dirt ball after dirt ball? Jalen Hurts is an abysmal passer. He needs to change positions to running back stat. But, John, it's just I've heard words like flabbergasted, stunned, blown away about Nick Saban's decision at halftime to go from Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa. I just don't get it. So all of this credit is being given to Nick Saban, the GOAT, for goading Kirby Smart. And he outcoached Kirby Smart and all this kind of stuff. And I think he did outcoach Kirby Smart, as we've documented the play calling and the way you shut down your offense and all that kind of stuff. But I think Nick Saban is getting way too much credit for pulling Jalen Hurts and going with Tua. To me, it was a no-brainer. Desmond Howard on the halftime show was vehement in Nick Saban making the quarterback change. Mm-hmm. There were probably many. Brandon from Lindale has been crying for a Tua change for months and months. I've been crying for an Alabama Tua change since the Auburn game. So I just don't understand it. I do think that Kirby Smart and Jim Chaney blew this game. I think they gave Nick Saban a championship. If you keep the pedal to the metal and you keep a balanced offense and Fromm is still taking back shoulder shots, I think Georgia wins that football game. They didn't do it, and they lost. I just think Nick Saban's getting way too much credit for that quarterback change.
Shocking, we disagree, because I think you have to give credit to the greatest coach. And there's no doubt in my mind now, he is the greatest college football coach in the history of college football. No Bear Bryant, no Bud Wilkinson, none of these other guys, Tom Osborne.
What about your guy Lambeau?
No, it's Nick Saban when it comes to college football, and there's nobody else. You're winning in an era where it's, you know, you're playing three extra games to win, where it's not Jimmy and, you know, Des Moines, Iowa voting for you, and maybe you've you know, greased Jimmy's pocket with a couple of bucks, and he throws you a first-place vote. No, you got to go out and earn and win the national championship on the field. What he's doing at Alabama is unprecedented. I'll go as far as say right now, 5 out of 9 years, this is the greatest dynasty in college football history. The end. It's Alabama. As much as I'd love to put my Canes up there, or Florida State or Oklahoma, the 40s, this is the greatest dynasty we are witnessing right now. And we're seeing simultaneously the two greatest dynasties in football. You have New England in the NFL, what they've done now for 16 or 17 years, and now what you have with the Alabama Crimson Tide. I think Nick Saban won the football game. I mean, I'm not going just based off what happened with Tua. His defense buckled down. Now, part of it had to do with Georgia getting a little bit conservative. But even when they had a chance and their backs are against the wall, Nick Saban in the past probably doesn't put Tua up to bat in overtime and let him throw it. He probably goes, all right, I'm trying to get back into field goal range. He went immediately for the jugular after a 16-yard sack. If they're playing, if Georgia plays anybody else in college football on Monday night, there's a parade going down Peachtree Street right now.
And if the Falcons had played anybody except the New England Patriots, we would have had a party and a parade then too. You're right. And John, you're right about everything you said about Alabama and Nick Saban and the greatest college football coach ever. He's the GOAT. The greatest dynasty in college football history. All of that is factually correct. But that's not the conversation I'm having here. That is, though, I think, the reason that all these national pundits are, again, falling all over each other to praise Nick Saban. I think it's more about the dynasty than this one particular coaching move. I think it's just the overall greatness of Nick Saban, and wow, he pulled a rabbit out of a hat. But again, if you have watched Alabama football this year, and Bama fans are driving around right now with their hand on their steering wheel, nodding their head, because they have seen it. They have dealt with the passing game deficiencies of Jalen Hurts. It has frustrated the heck out of Alabama Nation, and they were ready for something different. And so, to me, it was a move that was actually too late in being made by Nick Saban. So, and I'm a Nick Saban guy. John, as bummed as I was on Monday night when Devontae White down the sideline for the touchdown, and, you know, they show the replay of Nick Saban, I've never seen Nick Saban look happier than that moment. Do you ever see Nick Saban raise his hands? He never raises his hands. He just walks across the field. Yep, another championship. What we do here, not that one.
Oh, no.
That one was special for Nick.
I don't know if Mark has the soundbite back there, but he even said, he goes, this is the most happy I've ever been in my life. More than, and now, granted, it's in the context of football, so I'm sure marriage and kids and everything else.
No, I think football pretty much prevails.
It probably does. But for him to say this,
I'm happy for all these folks. I'm happy for our players. This was a great win for our players, and I've never been happier in my life. Never, never.
You've never heard Nick Saban say that.
Nope.
Ever. In all the years he's been a coach, it's, 2 years ago when they won the national title, and I know you can't magically just, boop, find that cut because that's 2 years ago and we got a lot of crap in the system back there. 2 years ago when they won the national title, if I remember correctly, Nick Saban literally looks and goes, well, you know, tomorrow we get back to work, because he was thinking about recruiting and everything else. This seems like he actually might go sit somewhere with an umbrella drink and lay back and smoke a stogie.
Or there's this take. Or, John, Nick Saban feels like he got away with one. Because to me, again, let's go back to the end of the Clemson game. Should Anfernee Jennings have been on the field with 2:45 to go in an 18-point game?
Probably not.
There's no way he should have been on the field. Mistake by Nick Saban. Mistake born of emotion. Nick was super emotional at the end of the Clemson game. And so that was a mistake by Nick Saban. It almost cost him in the national championship game. And then, to me, he went to the bullpen too late. Okay, his starting pitcher was getting rocked in Jalen Hurts, and he went to the bullpen too late with Tua. Now, that is too late in terms of my perception of it. Mm-hmm. I thought Tua should have played in the Clemson game. Maybe not started, but I thought that Hurts and Tua should have been on equal footing in the Clemson game. Wasn't the case. Hurts was run out there. And then, of course, Jalen Hurts face plants in the first half of the national championship game. And then Nick Saban goes to the bullpen. So Nick Saban's my guy. I'm a big, big fan. I'm a fan of Nick Saban. It's not just a respect thing. I actually like the guy. I like his vibe. I like how mean he is and nasty and busy and jerky he is. It all works for me. But I think he's getting too much credit for this win.
Yeah, I don't. I think he's getting right about the amount of credit he should be getting. Here's an interesting perspective, and I kind of agree with what George in Decatur texts in at 404-741-0929. He said, with both teams, talking about New England and Alabama, everybody seems to outcoach themselves, get cute, and intimidation sets in.
It's a great call.
Now, I don't know that Kirby was never...
Who wrote that, John?
George in Decatur, and we appreciate him.
That is a dope take. Yeah. I like it.
But I do think there is something to say about that. When you look on the other side and it's Nick Saban, and you look on the other side and it's Bill Belichick, I'm not saying Dan Quinn was intimidated in the fourth quarter, and I don't think Kirby Smart was intimidated, but there has to be in the back of your mind somewhere, boy, I'm just trying to run these 18 minutes out. Boy, I'm just trying to get these 6 minutes off the clock. I got to make a perfect call because you know he's going to call the perfect call.
But, John, you know that that's not how you beat those guys. You know that's not how you beat those guys. You have to keep chopping wood all the way to the end, the same way you have the entire year that got you there. And guess what? Both coaching staffs didn't do that in the fourth quarter of those games against the Goats. The same thing happened to both coaches. It was different, right? Shanahan and Quinn needed to just get super conservative and slam on the brakes and get a field goal. Nope, they went for it. Aggressive, 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 and it blows up and you lose. Georgia, the exact opposite. We're up 20-7. We're good. We just have to sail to the finish line, and we'll be fine. No, 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 no. Total miscalculation by Kirby Smart and Jim Chaney. Mid-third quarter, up 13 points in a college football game? Come on, John. Are you kidding me? That's like barely a lead to me.
Here's what's funny. People, and I'm not saying you, but people gave him crap for calling the pass play on first down after the interception that gets intercepted by Jake Fromm. They were trying to be aggressive up 20-7. It was a first down pass.
Right, but that interception caused Chaney and the whole thing to turtle up.
It did.
It did. And guess what? It was a bad decision by Jake Fromm, okay? A true freshman quarterback made one bad decision.
I don't even think it was a bad – the receiver was open. It was a bad execution. The ball went off somebody's helmet.
You're right, but to me, there's too much traffic and too much going on right there. I would not have been mad if Jake Fromm just ate that football. But that was a force. You know what I'm saying? He forced that one. It wasn't there, John. Now, was the receiver open? Yeah. But what was in between him and the receiver – I thought, you know, that the high angle right above sort of the pocket showed you that was a reach and a force by Fromm. I thought it was a bad decision. I thought he made two bad decisions all game. Taking the sack in overtime is a terrible decision. You got to huck that baby out of bounds. And then that throw after the pick by Tua. Two bad decisions by your true freshman quarterback should be good enough to win this game.
And I wasn't even mad at the interception decision. Partly, anytime you throw, and you know this, Rick, when you're in the pocket, even if it's a pristine pocket, you're finding angles. The guy whose helmet it hit, Fromm is facing this way. The guy's being blocked sideways. So you didn't even have a defensive lineman that could get his hands up. He's engaged sideways. And Jake, it almost looks like the ball slips out as he goes to throw it, and it ricochets off a helmet. Those are bad. We talk about with the Falcons, how many unfortunate bounces Matt Ryan's taken this year. That was one that's unfortunate. 99 times out of 100, that ball either is caught or falls harmlessly to the ground.
Do you agree with me that if the Dogs get Tua to the ground on 3rd-and-7, they win that football game?
Yes. I do.
To me, that was the play of the game. He escapes Houdini style and squirts out and gets that first down. And I'm like, oh, God. He, you know, because it gave him life. Mm-hmm. They had no life going on. Because remember, Tua was spectacular end of third, fourth, and OT. But it started rocky for him. Those first couple drives were like, okay, well, where's this going? I still loved the decision. And Nick Saban did say that when he made the decision that they were going to see how it went. Mm-hmm. And if Tua doesn't get that third and seven conversion, does he go back to Jalen Hurts?
Probably.
Maybe. It's just so crazy how this game turned out. But I put more blame on Kirby Smart than I give credit to Nick Saban. I'm probably on Camel Island with that. I just think Nick Saban's getting too much credit for the quarterback change.
You guys can hit us up, 404-741-0929. Here's one. Pretty simple. This guy said, the Falcons were too aggressive in the Super Bowl.
No doubt.
Georgia was too conservative.
That's what happened. That's why they lost, both teams. That's it. That's coaching. And as you said, the texter said, there is, bro, when you're playing poker with John Malkovich from Rounders,
yeah.
I'm sorry, you're looking at the dude.
Yeah.
The dude is right there. And by the way, the New England thing was a little different because you had two dudes.
Mm-hmm.
You had two goats.
Right.
And, you know, you had Tua who was blazing hot and all this stuff. And how much do you think Kirby and his crew schemed for Tua before that game?
Like I said, maybe 20 minutes the entire week of practice. Maybe.
So give me a percentage. They prepped 100% on Bama. How much of that 100% was spent on Tua Tagovailoa?
3%.
That is a total mistake by Kirby Smart and his staff, if that is true. And if the number's 15%, that is a mistake. You had to dude, did you watch the Clemson game? You had to anticipate that maybe a change was going
to
happen.
Here's why you didn't have to anticipate, because it hadn't happened all year. Jalen Hurts has been the same quarterback all year.
Yes, John, you're right. But Tua got time in games, and he looked good when he really good when
yeah,
he played.
Yeah, but when was that time, Rick? It was all mop-up crap duty.
It was, but he put stuff on tape for you to watch. Did you watch that tape? Did you go back and watch
I'm
the
sure
banner?
He watched it.
I don't. From what you said, they didn't. If they spent,
no, I didn't say they didn't watch tape. I said they didn't prep for him. If Tua's not getting into any meaningful act, zero, why would you spend a lot of time prepping for a kid that's probably not going to play? Now, it's a misstep because the kid ends up playing. Did Alabama prep for Jacob Eason at all? Because he's got stuff on tape.
I would say probably. Because I would say they probably did do a little bit of prep on Jacob Eason because Nick Saban and his staff are those guys. But the Tua Jalen Hurts thing, the Clemson game, John, not a bit of an eye-opener for you on Jalen Hurts that maybe this guy, like I've been saying it all year. I said it last year. It's one of the reasons I picked Clemson is Jalen Hurts is not going to be able to get the job done. Deshaun Watson's better than him. And it came down to that. And I thought that Jalen Hurts was going to struggle against the, like how did they not think that they were going to shut Hurts down and maybe create a situation where they get Tua in the game?
Because they hadn't shut him down. I mean, there's always a first time for it to happen. Had they had a precedent earlier in the year where, okay, against Mississippi State where they were struggling, we went to Tua and he won the game and the next week we're back. Then you think about it. They had never put the kid in for a meaningful snap.
I'm just saying, it's plan B.
Bunch of people are texting in saying, you know, this is a scenario where you guys aren't going to blame the referees. Hey, the refs played a portion in it. You still had a chance on 2nd and 26 to get a stop.
To me, the referees kept Bama in the game.
They did.
Early third quarter with two terrible calls. They didn't win the game for Bama, but they certainly gave them life early in the third quarter.
Hey, let's give away a pair of Hawks tickets to see San Antonio Monday, January the 15th. Tickets are available right now at AtlantaHawks.com. You'll have to go for station contest rules to 929thegame.com/rules. But we'll give some away right now, Paul. What do you want to do? Caller number? Let's do caller number 4. 404-741-0929. Caller number 4 will get a pair of tickets to see Hawks and Spurs. We come back, Arch.
Weeknights.
I mean, we're always confident. You know, we got a lot of playmakers on this offense, on the line, you know, backs, tight ends, receivers. So, you know, we know what we put the work throughout the week. You know, we'll be ready for Saturday.
That's Muhammad, third down, Sanu. Hi, Rick Hamla, John Michaels to my left, Dave Archer to my right. And he is so solid with the analysis. And Let's bring this job interview to the air right now. You see, John Gruden has been announced and introduced as the Raiders' new head coach. There's an opening besides Sean McDonough. There should be two openings. They should be looking for a new play-by-play guy, too. But McDonough's going to have that seat. And I want to be the first to beat the drum for Dave Archer for Monday Night Football game analyst. Arch, what do you say? It's going to be a definite pay raise for you. I promise you that.
It probably would be. But yeah, very kind, but no, I'm not presumptuous enough to think that that spot's for me, but I'll stick to my Falcon stuff if I can.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to lose both Wes and Arch, but boy, could you get you two guys on Monday Night Football? I'll wear a skirt if that's what it takes to do sidelines.
And a bra. Upgrade.
Well, I mean, I have an A-cups right now anyway.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it'd be an upgrade from McDonough and Gruden to Durham and Archer. And like I always say, John Michaels would be an upgrade over Lisa Salters. You know, maybe not easier on the eyes than Lisa, but you know, I think you could do Lisa Salter's job pretty well.
No. A little peek behind the window by Rick Campbell there to talking about your bra size.
Well, I mean, I'm a solid A right now. I gotta get back in the gym. Football season seems to bulk us up.
What I was talking about.
All right, Arch, let's get into it. Huge win on the West Coast Saturday night. Falcons did a lot of things right. I want to start with the defense. We've been talking about Marquand Manuel and the job that he's done. What did you see Saturday that was the most impressive thing they did defensively?
Defensively, I thought that their ability to take away run after the catch. They were concerned about the yak yards that in L.A. was right near the top in that yards after catch, especially Todd Gurley. Gurley came in leading them in receptions, but he's a guy that's going to catch the swing route, the check down route, and then all of a sudden he explodes and turns it into a 30-yard play, maybe puts it in the end zone. So they took that away. And a really good job and a nice design from a defensive standpoint. Whenever Gurley was lined up sidecar right or left of the quarterback in the shotgun, one of usually Ricardo Allen, but Neal stepped down in that area as well. When he leaked out, they jumped him man. They might have been playing zone everywhere else, but they jumped Gurley man. So there was somebody in Gurley's hip pocket the whole time, which I thought was outstanding. We talked about, you and I were talking before the game, and I thought that was kind of a magic number on Gurley. He came in over 2,000 yards, almost 2,100 yards of total offense on the year. I thought the magic number for Gurley was if you could limit him to right around 100 yards of total offense, you were going to have a really good chance to beat them and maybe beat them soundly. He got 110, and you kept him out of the end zone. You did those kind of things because he was, you know, what do you have, 19 touchdowns coming into the game?
Yep.
So you did a really good job on their best player.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the time of possession to keep him off the field was huge as well because Gurley had a good yard per carry. I think it was 7 yards a carry or something like that. But they limited the carries. And, Arch, I want to talk to you about the pass by Matt Ryan. Chris Collinsworth called it a lollipop, and I thought that was a diss.
Chris Collinsworth is a lollipop.
There you go. There you go. And, by the way, he incessantly brought up the Super Bowl.
Sure he did.
And, he sent Twitter, like Falcon Nation was hot at him on Twitter. But, nevertheless, that throw by Matt Ryan, I think it's the throw of the year for the Atlanta Falcons. I thought it was a dime under really difficult circumstances.
It really was, Rick, and it's neat that you saw that because as he comes out of the bootleg, you have to swivel your head pretty quickly because you're expecting the edge rusher to potentially be there. Well, Connor Barwin is there, and Connor Barwin's about a 6'3", 6'4", guy that elevates in front of him. Now, he's going to try to shoot the ball around him, maybe the little sidearm, sidecar throw where he shoots it around, but his right foot slips out from underneath him, as we all saw. So now I've got to throw it over a guy that's no longer 6'3 or 6'4. He's about, you know, with his arms extended, he's now damn near 10 feet high. And I've got to loop it over him. Julio Jones is running a flat route, racing away from me with a defender fairly close. If I throw that ball short, it's a pick six. He throws it right over the top, drops it down the chimney chute. To have the presence of mind to be able to put the proper trajectory on that, get it in bounds to Julio, and give Hu an opportunity to make the play. It was as easily one of the best throws he made all year. I don't think there's any question about that.
Arch Sark has obviously gotten some criticism throughout the year, but I think as the season's progressed, he knows his personnel better. He's been calling some really good games. Second half of this game, the Falcons dominated time of possession. Sark realized we can run the football against this group, and he kept doing it. Did you like the way that he kind of eschewed the pass a little bit in the second half, except when they really needed it?
Well, I like the fact that they made an adjustment at halftime. You know, we talk about halftime adjustments. We're a stretch zone run team, okay, we don't play counter football. We rarely run counter plays. And when I say counter plays, they're what I call broken line plays, if you listen to the broadcast, where we pin one side and then we'll pull a guard or get a tight end and a tight end out in front. It's a counter play, slower developing play. You get double teams on two of those interior blockers or interior defenders, and then you can lead up on the backers. We don't do that very much. We shifted gears and went to that in the second half. And that was what ultimately did in the Rams, because it kept them on the field, and now all of a sudden they're not as deep. Now, this Philly team, and we'll talk about them in a few minutes, they're a little bit deeper on the defensive line. Rams weren't as deep, so Donald, Westbrook, those guys had to play more snaps. And if you kept them on the field, which was the plan, then you could diminish them pass rush-wise. If you can physically start to diminish them, then pass rush won't be there. And what you did with that 8.5-minute drive is you took their stinger from them. And so they get the ball, don't do anything with it, give it back to us, and we went on another drive. If you remember, that facilitated the Mohamed Sanu play, because they weren't running to the football at that point like they were early in the game. Remember, they were all over the field, blitzing, coming all over the place. They were having a tough time blocking them. But that they diminished them in the third quarter to the point where the Sanu play was facilitated by how they pounded them with the run game.
Analyst for the Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, in studio with your boys, Rick and John, throwing our typical midday party. I want to talk playoff experience and inexperience. In the Rams game, you've got Sean McVay blinking. 8 seconds left, you got to take a shot and then go with the field goal. I thought that was a mistake. You've got Dan Quinn not blinking, 4th-and-1, Ryan Sneak, let's go. And then you've got McVay blinking again to me. You're driving 3rd-and-14, down 9, 4th quarter, and you come with a Malcolm Brown run. Are you freaking kidding me? So I thought there was a little deer in headlights from Sean McVay. Hadn't coached in a playoff game before. Now, let's go to Philly. Doug Peterson has not been a head coach in a playoff game before. Isn't it kind of nice to have the veteran experience side on our side of the ledger, Arch?
For a while, right. It is pretty cool to have a guy that all these guys have been through it. This young football team we talk about all the time, they're wearing the Falcons on the side of their helmet. They're all veteran players now, even though we're looking up and he's only a second-year guy. This guy's only a third-year guy. But there's any question about that, Rick, and I think it plays in, because there'll be moments. And we talk about, a lot of times coaches talk to players, and I remember sitting in meetings, and, you know, there are going to be 5-6 plays in this game that are going to decide it. You don't know what play that is. So we got to play them all like they're that way, okay? Well, the same thing happens with the coach as well. There are going to be 5 or 6 decisions he's going to make during the game. Go for it, not go for it. Kick a field goal, whatever. Punt the ball. That he's going to make those decisions, and they're going to have to be on the fly. If you've been there before, a lot easier to make those decisions.
One of the things I thought the Falcons did great and they'll need to do well against Philly is the special teams did not give up any hidden yardage. DeMonte Casey played the best special teams game of the year for the Falcons with the recovery and the forced fumble. I thought Matt Bosher punted it well. Matt Bryant did as well. Do you think that's going to play a huge factor against Philadelphia this week?
Yeah, I think it will. I think that what you can't do if you're the Falcons is you can't let your stinger down a little. You can't not have...
That's two stingers in one interview.
Get two stingers? Where is the sound for the stinger anyway?
Where is Mike Glenn when you need it?
He's at Dantana's.
That's what I'm talking about. So you can't allow yourself not to be amped up to play special teams again. They had the number one kick returner in the league they were taking on. That had been pounded in their head all week long. Hey, Pharaoh Cooper, all pro. This is a guy that's killing people. He's taking one back for a touchdown. You got it. Don't let him flip the field on you. Well, they dominated him. They dominated the game in the special teams area, created 2 turnovers in the game, which created short field opportunities. Got to have that same mindset going into this game. Kenyon Barner is a guy that can break your back if you give him an opportunity. So not quite as celebrated as you saw with Pharaoh Cooper, but still a guy that can play well. And whenever you're a team that's a number one seed, you look down through, and a lot of people talk about their offense and defense. They're pretty good on special teams as well. That's the only way they get there.
Dave Archer breaking down Falcons and Eagles with Rick and John here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You're going to hear the game, of course, on Saturday afternoon. John's going to be on the field. Dave will be in the booth with Wes Durham. And Dave's in the Kia Studios with us right now. So, Arch, in terms of this devastating run defense that Philly has, number one run defense in football, I think that, and tell me if you buy this theory or if this will be the Arch Takes Kamala Deep moment of this interview. I think that they need to pass to set up the run. Do you agree?
I think this is a team that you could have success with throwing the ball on first down, Rick. I agree with that. This is a different set that you're going to see against Philly. Philly plays what's called a wide nine technique out of their 2 defensive ends. More often than not, their edge players are going to be lined up outside of our tackles trying to pinch everything to the inside, which makes it difficult to run the stretch game. It can create some problems for your offensive line in certain and in definite pass situations, because it's a straight line from where they're lined up to your quarterback, makes it hard for the tackle to get there. So how do you slow that down? Obviously, you need to be able to run at some, but you have to be able to throw the ball on first down. So they're not anticipating. They're thinking run. We run the stretch play extremely well. That'll be something we'll try to run, but I think you can get some yardage to the inside of those two edge players, but you also have to throw it on first down to prevent them from just teeing themselves off on third down. Now, there's only been four teams all year that have converted more than 40% of the time on third down against this crowd.
Ooh.
They are really good on third down. So that means you've got to be in good situations where run pass is still the option. Where you're third and four, I can still turn it and hand it to Devontae and pick up the first down.
Won't be a raucous crowd or anything. It should be nice tea and crumpets up there, right, Arch?
What's a crumpet?
I don't know. That's what they do in Miami. They have crumpets in Miami, I guess.
Do you have eggs and crumpets? Did you have eggs and crumpets this morning?
No. I don't even know what a crumpet is.
I don't either. I just heard it before.
You've heard it before?
No. Do I look like I know what a crumpet is?
You can't use it anymore if you don't know what it is.
Whatever. I think I hit somebody with a trumpet before. Does that count?
No, believe me, there are going to be Philly cheesesteaks and beers, and a lot of them are going to be thrown at you.
That's
on the
nice.
Sideline.
That's fine. Okay. That's fine. Batteries as well. That's what Preacher Man's telling me.
Hashtag Arch, the number four, MNF.
Yep.
Arch 4 MNF. That's the new hashtag.
I think we should get that out there and get that started
thanks,
on Twitter.
Guys.
Arch, thanks as
Archie the man.
Have fun up at the branch today. Take a break. We'll come back. When we get back from the break, we're going to tell you the college football cheat sheet question of the day. Do you believe the Dogs will be back in the playoffs within the next 2 years? Talk about that next on Sports Radio 92.9. The game.
Rick and John have the latest news from college football and want to hear from you. 404-741-0929. This is the College Football Cheat Sheet on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the College Football Cheat Sheet brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC tune-up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. Our thanks to the rock-solid Dave Archer. Had a great conversation with him off the air. Wished him safe travels to Philly. John, I wish you the same. Flying out on Friday?
Yep, I'm leaving here at noon on Friday.
Noon? Are we at Twin Peaks and Buckhead on Friday?
Signs point to no.
Come on.
You know who I saw?
Come on.
And I meant to tell you. Maybe I texted
Terrible
you.
News.
You know who I saw at the last regular season game? I saw your friend Kimberly. She was at the last regular season
Falcons game.
She was down in one of those sideline suite areas.
Nice.
And I just hear, John. I'm like, huh? Who's calling me? She goes, where's Rick? How are you guys doing? Good to see you. She was with some dude. So I was like, hey, how you doing?
Kimberly is an outstanding bartender at Twin Peaks and Buckhead.
Preacher Man said she had tickets to the national title game.
I'm sure she did. She's got the hookup, but shout out to Kimberly, man. I can't wait to get back to Twin Peaks and Buckhead. We have such a blast over there.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we're at Twin Peaks, I would have had to leave at like 11:15 because traffic getting out of Buckhead is miserable.
So you're asking me, John. We're asking the people in our college football question of the day. Do you believe the Dogs are going to be back in the playoffs in the next 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say yes, but I can't. Here's why. This was a very odd year in college football. Pac-12, bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Big Ten, bye-bye. We're not going to be able to do that most years, okay? And usually it's the Big 12 that's left out. They were in, but really the Pac-12 and the Big 10 were out? Come on. That ain't going to happen very, very many years going forward. So we can't assume that there's going to be two SEC teams in the four every year.
No doubt.
So let's unravel that. What that means is Georgia's going to have to beat Alabama in SEC championship games to go to the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
So do you like their chances of doing that?
Yes.
Next year? I don't.
No, not next year.
The year after? Maybe, but to me, Alabama is set up. Think about it. These last 2 years were supposedly down years, transitional years, reload years, however you want to say. Well, next year isn't. They've got all kinds of guys coming back. And they're going to send a bunch of dudes to the NFL as well. It's a factory, as you all know. I can't guarantee you in the next 2 years, John, that Georgia is going to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. So I can't sit here right now and try to make everybody feel better and say, oh, yeah, no problem. You'll be back in the playoff in the next 2 years. I hope they are, but I can't make that promise right now.
I'm not going to promise it, but I'd err on the side of yes. I've already said next year I think Georgia, and I haven't looked at the schedule or anything, they're going to be 10-2-ish. They'll win the SEC East. Probably lose the SEC title game because you lose all the seniors that they have, and I think 31's the number.
31 seniors.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
That's a lot of talent and a lot of mature talent
yep.
on your football
no
team.
Doubt.
DeAndre Swift, Harrion, Elijah Holyfield, the new kid Zeus that's coming in. You're still going to have talented kids at running back. They're not Sony Michel and Nick Chubb yet. They could be. Sony Michel and Nick Chubb proved it on the field for 4 years in the SEC. Javon Wims was a stud this year catching the football. Why I like the chances to be back in 2 years, you have Jake Fromm for 2 more years. You had a true freshman who wasn't asked to do as much lead you to a national title game. You think that Jim Chaney next year won't go, all right, I could take the gloves off and let Jake Fromm throw it 30 times a game instead of 17 or 18.
You're going to have a way more balanced offense next year. And, oh, by the way, John, the whole year for the Dogs leads up to one thing. Beat Bama. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. They're going to win the SEC East. There's very, very little doubt about that. Now, can you handle your business in your non-conference games and get the record built up so that you will make the playoff if you win the SEC? But it's all about beating Bama. Okay, how do you beat Bama? You're going to need Jake Fromm to light up the scoreboard. That's how you're going to beat Bama. Because as we've talked about, you were way too loyal to Nick Chubb and ran Nick Chubb into a brick wall and you lost. Okay, they needed to unleash Jake Fromm and have a balanced offense third quarter into the fourth quarter. They didn't do that. We've documented that time and time again. Next year has to be different. It has to be Jake Fromm goes from game manager plus to 250, 270 yards and 2 to 3 touchdowns every game. Do you agree with me? I think that he needs to put up big numbers. I think it needs to be not 63 run, 37 pass. This needs
it's
to be like
55
run, 45 pass. They got to have a balanced offense next year because that's how they will beat Bama. If it's all run and a little bit of passing here, then Fromm's going to be in that scenario again, and Smart and Chaney may be gun-shy to unleash him against Bama.
But let's be honest, in the two playoff games, they were a lot more 50-50 balance. I know they ran it for a ton of yards against
Oklahoma. And they were against Bama until they weren't.
Yeah.
And it was totally working, and that's my huge complaint on that game. If they keep doing it the way they were doing it with a balanced offense, where would we be right now, John? Would
probably,
the parade be
probably
tomorrow
on the back
or
of a
today?
Fire truck? I don't know. Or we would have been on the top of
won
a minivan. We're all dads now, so we'd be on the top of a soccer minivan,
sipping on juice boxes.
We'd be throwing out tube socks instead. Like, you know, people throw out koozies. We're throwing out tube socks.
And then Mark Owens bathing in Jack Daniels or Jack Fire. Sorry,
Jack Fire. Or both. I broke up the fireball.
By the way, Jack Fire's pretty good.
Yes, sir.
I'm okay with Jack Fire.
They've had a celebratory drink at Stats.
Damn, that was a big shot. That was a two-shot shot.
That was a, all right, guys, good show. Good luck today. What? I want to make it to the game. Thank you, Stats. You know, if you're asking me, it all comes down to this. Got to get past Austin Peay. September the 1st. Got to get past.
Yep.
Austin Peay, South Carolina, at South Carolina, hosting Middle Tennessee.
3-0.
At Mizzou.
4-0.
Hosting Tennessee, hosting Vandy.
5-0, 6-0. Wow.
At LSU.
6-1.
Georgia, Florida.
Whoa. Do we know if that's Death Valley at night?
Death Valley, but they won't announce the time yet.
Depending on where they are with records, it'll be a night game.
So who after the LSU?
Then you get a break, and then you get Jacksonville.
That's 7-1.
Then at Kentucky.
8-1.
Hosting Auburn.
9-1.
Hosting UMass.
10-1.
UMass.
Wrapping up the season. Hosting Georgia Tech.
Okay, I've changed my. They're 11-1 next year,
dude.
You should just put a big cupcake next to that schedule.
Oh, that is as cupcakey as you can get. Well played, Preacher Man. Here's the deal, though. I just want to caution you to one thing: do not sleep on Week 2 at South Carolina. I'm saying right now. Watched that bowl game against Michigan. Will Muschamp has a nice thing brewing there. There was terrific energy through that team as they came back to beat Michigan. The Dogs should win that game. I'm just saying. That is not just a speed bump. That is, they're going to have to go in there with their hard hats and get that one done.
Bang through a couple of
calls. Think about it. This year was 28-14 up in Athens.
7410929. Chris in Alpharetta, do you think Georgia will be back in the playoffs within the next 2 years?
Hey, fellas.
What's up, Chris?
Hey, not much, fellas. Hey, look, I'm going to go another route with this. I'm talking about Georgia and Alabama, but it seems to me you guys really think most people really think that Alabama is so much better than Georgia. That's not nearly the case, fellas. But bear with me for a second. Georgia has the number one recruiting class in the country right now. We're aware of that, okay? But do you realize Georgia has 6 5-stars and the rest of the SEC, I think, have 7. Now, that's just bear with me. That's just this year. I understand just this year. In 2019... they have the top 2 receivers in the country already committed. I know they hadn't signed, but they already committed. and they have one of the top outside linebackers committed. So they have the number one recruiting class in 2019. Now, that doesn't mean anything because we know how that five-star thing means. It works. But the deal is the offensive and defensive line, we're going to be monsters next year on that. Monsters. We're talking about losing 31 seniors. I agree. That's a hit. But how many of them really, really made a difference? The leadership factor is big. I agree with that. But how many of them really made a difference? Our defensive line, we got one guy that's leaving, hopefully. One that's a senior. Offensive line, we only have one that's leaving. We redshirted the top recruit that we had last year. We redshirted him. He's a lineman. So we got two freshmen that start this year, and we got four other freshmen that didn't get a chance to play this year.
Chris, we appreciate it. I get all that.
It's a
that.
Great breakdown.
Yeah, I'm not knocking who Georgia. I think next year they take a step back. You lose 31 seniors, whether they were the number one player, the number 10 player, that's still depth on your team. I get you have the number one class coming in. I got to see him on campus and actually playing football before I'm going to praise him for being the greatest.
All I'm saying is, George, and was that Chris?
Yeah.
Chris did an unbelievable job of laying out the health of the UGA program. Great job, Chris. This isn't about that for me. This is about beating Alabama. That's the bottom line here. What he just described, John, is going to be plenty good enough to beat Florida and Tennessee and Vandy and all these teams. Okay, beat Bama in the SEC championship game. That's your path to the playoff. And if you beat Bama and knock them out, then you don't have to play Bama. And then you've got all these other teams that you're probably going to be better than. But, John, the question isn't are they going to the playoff. The question is, can they beat Bama?
Can they?
I don't know.
Can they? Yes, absolutely. You're in an overtime game against Bama. You absolutely can beat them.
But now all these puppies, Jacobs, Harris, Judy, Ruggs, Devontae White, Tua, they're all freshmen. Every single one of them.
That's what Bama does. I mean, they've always had them sitting there.
How much better are those dudes going to be next year?
Oh, they're going to be better.
They're
going
to be way better. And by the way, Bama is going to be back to having a diversified offense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? With Tua, it's now going to be a throw/run offense like they had with Jay Coker, like they had with Blake Sims.
Let's go to our buddy Jeremiah. Jeremiah on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Jeremiah, how you doing?
How you doing, gentlemen?
Doing very good.
All right. You hit on a point earlier about South Carolina. Mike did, I guess, that South Carolina's going to be something to be dealt with next year. But and you got Florida, but I think Georgia will control the East. But like you say, you got to get Alabama in the SEC championship. I appreciate it, though.
Appreciate it, Jeremiah.
So, John, I'm glad we went through the schedule. So your bottom line is your two toughest games of the year are at South Carolina and at LSU.
Yep, and then home against Auburn.
Right, but those are your two toughest road games?
Yep.
I would take that all day if I were a dog fan.
Absolutely.
That is a nice primrose path.
Although you do have two tough games out of the West. You could have had much easier path than having LSU and Auburn. We take a break. We come back. What do we got coming up next? Coach's show?
Yes, sir.
It's West.
The Coach's
show. Okay. It's West Durham. Coming up next. Part of the Coach's show on Sports Radio 92.9. The Game.
The Bunkerman.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.